You want to be making life-changing money for risking your life every other weekend, and it's not like that anymore. I was there for 5 years in MotoGP, racing against Valentino Rossi, Jorge Lorenzo, Andrea Dovizioso, Marc Marquez. I've raced him all my life. Like, it's crazy. I thought I would be retired at 30, multi-millionaire, living the dream. Didn't happen.
Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, they will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe so that you never miss an episode on YouTube, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
I'm already smiling because this is going to be a belter of an episode. Today's guest, well, he's a legend on two wheels, be it bike, motorbikes, whatever. This guy has some serious skill and he's been doing it for years. I was trying to think, I think I first interviewed our guest, it's got to be 10 years ago. He was going for Moto2 World Championship. He is so talented. He's a good bloke as well. It is, of course, the one and only Scott Redding.
Super. Yo.
Hello, mate.
How are we doing, Scott? You good?
That was an introduction and a half, that was.
Well, it's true, mate. We'll come on to that in a minute. But, you know, massive respect for you. Everything you seem to do, you give it 150% effort and you normally come out triumphant. So, yeah, it's all good.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's going to be cool.
Our pleasure. And as Ewan was saying there, Scott, the new season of BSB is just around the corner, just about a month's time. And before we started recording, you'd mentioned about the fact that you've already been out this morning, first thing, ticking over, making sure that you're in the right kind of physical condition. What's the prep like? Talk us through it. I've got an inkling from a football point of view. Ewan knows what it's like on the track. What's it like from you getting into the new season?
It's a bit different being a relatively newly father. It's that changed a lot for me last year, but this year was more of a normal base training for me, but also having such a long break between racing. So my last race was Brands Hatch, I think, like beginning of November. And I haven't rode a motorcycle track bike since. So I've just been focusing on cycling, which a lot of my training is focused for cycling. I race with that as well, do a lot of big events. And it takes up most of my time with the fitness. And I was speaking to someone yesterday, actually, is like, I don't really do gym work anymore. One, because I always get big quite easy and I'm always chasing my weight, should we say. And this year I did like 3 weeks of training with weights and I went up nearly 2 kilos. And I was like, this is why I can't do it. But on the other hand, because I'm like older and experienced now, I feel like my body just knows how to do it, like staying relaxed. And it's what works for me and for many people. You know, gym works for them, running works for them. For me, it's cycling. I enjoy it. I push to my limits. And you need to be bike fit also.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later because, you know, I've followed your career since the start, really. And there's no one who works harder than you, you know, be it on a push bike, whatever it is. You are super fit. You came into the sport so young, though. I think you were the first winner of a Grand Prix 15 years old, 15 years and 170 days to be precise. So you know what it's like to have that level of commitment from a young age. I have to touch upon one of your social media posts the other day. Your little boy Hudson came off on the bike and you were up you get then up you get. And I just love that's your winning mentality. Would you love to see him go into motorbike racing? Because he's clearly already got some skill.
Yes and no. It's one of those. I feel like we don't really have a choice. Like he does things on the bike already that it impresses me. I'm like, how do you know how to do that? Like we was out riding in the garden. I was doing daddy daycare and he's found a lump in the garden. He just wants to hit it and he wants to hit it. But now he comes up to it and I've said nothing to him. Granted, he came to watch motocross yesterday. He comes up to this lump for him as a jump. He stands up on the pegs and I'm like, where did you even learn that? I've not told you that's where you stand up. But it's like he's got that in his mind of improving. You know, he's just turned 18 months old and he's riding electric quad and he's turning, like he's not crashing into things and he goes through gaps and I'm like, there's no way he's getting through it. Got through it and I'm thinking, oh, like it was fluke and he'll do it again and again and again. And he absolutely loves it. So when he crashes the bike, I also make it a bit fun. So we'll crash, be like, oh, yellow flag, we've got a man down. And he's like smiling. I'm like, let's get up, let's go. Mm-hmm. And he wants to go. You know, and it's one of those that sometimes I would say they're born with it and sometimes they develop it. I was more of a developer more than born with it, but would I want him into racing? Probably, because I feel I can help him with, when I come into racing, I learned a lot by myself and I got a lot of knowledge. And I feel like if I had that when I was younger, I probably could have gone further. So I feel I could teach him more in a way that he will understand. And I think that's quite important. But at the same time, money, injuries, future for him, it is a lot that comes around, because I don't think there's a lot of money to be made in motorcycle racing as there used to be. When I look at value to money, juice worth the squeeze, it's kind of like, you know, you want to be making life-changing money for risking your life every other weekend, and it's not like that anymore. So we need to see. Maybe it changes and some money comes back into the sport and, you know, it'll be world champion living the dream.
That saying, is the juice worth the squeeze, is absolutely fantastic. Love Scott, it. I've never heard that before.
I've never heard
and
that.
That will definitely be getting used again. And again, I mean, we talk about Hudson there and how fearless he is at 18 months, which is ridiculous. So then you said it was a slightly different kind of journey or path for you. Were you being pushed at an early age? Did you pick it up naturally at an early age? Where does that driving force, where does that desire, that passion for it all come from?
So I started young, like four, on a dirt bike, and I was okay. I was, you know, like local rider, finishing like top three, top five, but I hated it. I cried a lot. It scared the hell out of me. I'm honest. I'm not going to say, you know, it was all good. I hated it. One day I got hit off the start by someone. I made a beeline for my mum at the time. And she said, you better go. Your dad's coming. And I just refused. And my dad came, grabbed me by my helmet, threw the bike in the van. And when I mean throw, I mean throw. And I followed. We went home. We didn't go back to the motocross track since. And then a couple of weeks later, my uncle bought a mini moto. And that was, for me, a lot better. It wasn't so scary without the jumps, because we were riding adult tracks with the huge jumps and the ruts, and it was crazy. But with the mini moto, I didn't have that. And then I enjoyed it. But I still got to where I was because they pushed me. It's not something I wanted to do. I wanted to do BMX or skateboarding. I did loads of stuff in my own thing. I never said to my dad, like, I want to go racing. Can I go ride the mini moto? Like, in my whole life, I reckon there's been two or three times that I've actually said, I want to go ride. It's more that they saw the ability that I had, and they pushed me through it. So sometimes I would ride not well and I'd get shouted at and I'd be crying, but then they'd slam the visor down and I'd go and win. So it's like, we can unlock it, but it's maybe not the way that people feel you should do those things. But I feel that how they built me up, not knowing, I believe none of it was planned. It was just old school back in the day, kind of forcing me to somewhat do it. But now I see that's probably what's built that resilience inside of me of why I can go so hard in training and I don't want to give up and I'll just keep trying. I have up and down days, but I always bounce back. And I've never loved racing, but I love winning. And that is, for me, the key. Like, a lot of people don't understand it when I say, like, I don't really love what I do. It's honest, I don't love it. I love riding my bicycle. I love traveling the world, doing great events. I love that. Do I love racing my bike? No. But do I love winning? Yes. So is the juice worth the squeeze? Yes. You know, and that's where you come to limits where you feel nervous, like, oh, I'm kind of on the limit right now. Will I go past it? And for me, if I can win, I'll go for it. Quite calculated, but at the end of the day, it's like, will you risk more to win? And for me, it's yes. And that was from my childhood being the way it was. Whereas now I believe a lot of riders and kids these days, they don't have that inside of them. They would, you know, rather not take the safe option. Safety is not going to make you win.
Scott, I mean, what you've said there, mate, is absolutely fascinating. And there's so many different levels to it. And even more so off the bat that we just discussed, you and your little boy. I mean, and just coming away from racing and riding bikes and stuff, just purely from, because we're all sat here as dads, does that then change how you have interacted with your son, given what you experienced? Has that given you the, do you take bits out of what you experienced and think, yeah, that still applies in this day and age with my son? Or do you think that's not the way I want to do it with my son? Do you think it is the way to do it with your son? Because that's quite a huge fundamental learning curve and lesson that's been laid down for you as a young person, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know what? I've not been asked questions about my son. So it's all, these are very new questions to me. And I do sit back and I do think how I will do it. So I calculate before I do it with him. I always believe starting early is better than later. But I understand the risk and the safety side of things. So when I'm doing something with him, I know how it could go wrong. So if he's riding and he turns and he's going to crash, there's a good chance I can prevent that happening. In my day, I was just left to my own devices and you'd find out by crashing. Regarding how strict to be, I believe there is a big part in that, because when you look at any winners in any sport, they are warriors. You know, when the tough gets going, that's when you start to see it separate. In anything, when it gets hard, it's here. Your brain is the strongest and most powerful part of your body, which can make those decisions. So you need to build that in a young age. But I feel like how he sees me is how he acts. And we know that's a very big thing with being a father. But I do a lot of things naturally. And I see him picking up. So I'm in the gym, I'm doing pull-ups. He comes in, he says, me. So every other night, I'm helping him and he's up on the pull-up bar and he's doing three. Yeah. And I'm like, go. And you see in his head, he wants to do it. And he wants to, and he grabs the weights and he's trying to copy me. So I didn't have that role model. My dad was a truck driver. My uncle worked on a farm. I didn't have a mum after the age of 4 or 5. I was left to my own devices. But my dad was very winning orientated. So he used to race motocross on a local level, senior expert. But the stories he told me, he would do anything to win. The stories, the amount of people he took out after the finish line, he just couldn't hold on, but he refused to lose. That was embedded in me. And I feel like you learn and you absorb so much around you that the role model I can be just by how I am now is already a massive thing to him. And I think that's like I crashed the other day, I put a hole in my elbow and he was looking, he was like kind of like scarring his face. I'm like, it's okay. It's like, it's just part of it. Like, I'll be okay. And he's like, he's kind of seeing it like an injury. And at that age, I think, how do you recognize it? But by me telling him it's okay, when he injures himself and I tell it's okay, he's more like, oh, actually I will be okay. So you can guide more. But I want to build like the mental strength, because it's what a lot of kids don't have now, is when it gets hard, they give up, and you ain't going to be successful in anything when you do that. And I don't want my son to be in that way. I want him to be happy, mentally strong, but you got to have that like go time. You got to get stuck in.
Yeah.
You're clearly, and I know you are, you're clearly an amazing dad. And don't underestimate your dad, because your dad sounds like my dad was. It was old school back then and he was very strict with me. But you know from being a father, your dad would only have been doing what he felt was best for you at the time. It may have been tough love, but what you've learned through your childhood 100% is going to make you a better dad, and it does make you a better dad. What I found interesting earlier, what you said about you don't really enjoy what you do. You love winning, but you don't really enjoy it. I think from me and Prutz, who were retired from sport, it would be interesting when you eventually hang your helmet up and you look back how much you'll miss it, or maybe you won't, because I think sometimes when you're in something, you focus on, you know, the stuff that you don't really enjoy about it. But I reckon when you eventually retire, you'll probably look back and go, wow, I had a great life. I loved racing. But it'll be interesting to see.
So you saying that is like how I look back at MotoGP now, because BSB, I've always had a lot of pressure to win and succeed. I've been one of less than 5 British guys to go to MotoGP and be on the podium and fight for Moto2 World Championships. But people don't understand how much pressure that is to take on your shoulders all the time. And I'm about winning. So if I'm off the podium, it ain't a good day. And I had that for, you know, on and off for 10 years. I had suffered mentally with that. But
yeah,
when I look back now, I'm proud of what I did. So I look back, I'm like, damn, you finished eighth in a MotoGP race there, fifth there, 10th there. Like, people would give arms and legs to do that. And I was doing it. But in the time, I was like, it's not good enough. Forget what a bad weekend. Mm. And it was that drive that sometimes drives you into like a negative hole. But now for me in BSB, and when I had the baby, this is like, I might get some backlash for this, but it's just fun for me. So now I want to enjoy my racing. And I can enjoy BSB because no electronics, traveling's easier, good vibe of people in there. You've all got the same tire. It's just like, for me, I call it like old school racing. And the best man on the day can win. You know, you get guys on older bikes that go well at certain tracks, and then they're like maybe nowhere the next week, like us at Thruxton. To try and get top 10 is super hard, but there might be strong tracks for us. And I love that variety of riders that can win. And I enjoy that. And I want to always say before the races now is like to my family, because I had a lot of pressure, is no matter what happens, I'm doing my best. So if I can win, I will win. But if I finish fourth, I finished fourth. There's nothing more I can do, and I don't want anyone to say anything about it because I want to enjoy it. Because at this point, if I don't enjoy riding, my career is going to be very short, and I don't want it to be like that. So making that change to BSB has brought me to that position where actually I do enjoy it. I love winning more, but I've got this little part in my head now that goes, you know what, you finished fifth, but there's not one thing you could have done better. Take it. Happy days. Move on to the next one. Done. Instead of having that in your head going home like, oh, fifth, how do I improve so much? If it's fifth or it's first, honestly, I can't care about it. You know, it's going to sting a little bit to have that win, but I don't want it.
Yeah, it sounds like you're at peace with yourself. Do you know what I mean? It sounds like you're in a really good headspace in terms of your career, your private life. Long may it continue, because it does seem like you're in a really good place.
Well, I kind of come to the agreement with myself is I don't have to prove anything. And this has been a big thing for me, understanding what I've done. And obviously social media talks a lot of bad things. I don't know if I can swear on here, probably won't. But going to World Superbikes and people are like, you're a rider, like you don't know. And I'm like, yo, youngest ever Grand Prix winner, Moto2 runner-up, won multiple races, MotoGP front row starter, two podiums, won World Superbike races, second in the World Superbike Championship. I went and won BSB after breaking my femur 2 months before the start of the season, didn't know the tracks, got stuck in, went back to World Superbike, and it's like, you don't see that? I've raced against the best of the best in MotoGP. I don't have nothing to prove. Like, I'm doing this for me now. And if you can't respect what I've done, you know, shame on you. Like, I don't need to prove anything. Like, me winning British Superbike titles, yeah, it's cool. But that ain't me going up, you know. It's not like Moto2 or MotoGP. My career's done this, World Superbike, and it's like, go to BSB. It's like, it's a bit of a step down, but it's for the right reasons for me. You know, and it's not like I'm going to go there and dominate every race and be like, oh, like, if I win, great. If I don't, and I've had an absolute battle with another rider for the championship, I'll go shake his hand. Like, what do you want to do?
The way you're describing, Scott, what you've done, and way, I mean, it's phenomenal. And you're absolutely right. That sense of owning that spot where you stand, I think we'll all understand that as either current or ex-professionals in sport, that you do have to be. And it's not an egotistical thing at all. To a different degree, when people talk about football and what level of football you've played at, you still do have to remind yourself, again, away from any form of ego, that to be able to call it a job is less than 1% of people that actually go into it. Yeah. So you're kind of going, I understand it's popular and I get your opinion and you might think I'm terrible, but let's put it in perspective of where this kind of went and where yours went. And I totally get it. And even more so when that you're risking your life as you're doing, Scott, when you're in that professional environment. When you talk about MotoGP, and when you think about the last British rider to compete full-time, Cal Crutchlow back in 2020, the developmental side of a young rider in this country, say between us and like a Spain somewhere, is there a gulf in that help, that funding, that ability to be able to push and support and keep you in that particular vicinity? Because you talked before about speaking to Hudson as he gets older and maybe pushing him in whichever direction, going back to the saying, is the juice worth the squeeze? That what you're doing to your body, what you're doing to your mentality, what you're risking every single time you get on that bike, it's the remuneration doesn't seem to be there to back it up. Would that be right?
Yeah, I would say so. The thing with like Spain and Italy, it's the heart of the sport. It's where the money is. And you just have to look at the MotoGP grid now. This is, you know, I don't want to talk bad on the championship, you know, because it's the best in the world. But when you look at the lineup of riders on factory bikes for the past, you know, especially the last 3 years, they're all Spanish and Italian. They're all factory bikes, Spanish and Italian. You know, there was a rule when the year before Marquez went to MotoGP, I remember it was Ben Spies was around that time. And the rule came in, up and coming riders need to do, it's like 1 or 2 years on a satellite bike and then you can go on a factory bike. You know what? Fair, cool. Mm. And then the year Marquez comes up, that rule scrapped, you go straight to Repsol HRC. You know, and that's the thing, you look at it, it's all Spanish and Italians on factory bikes. So when you're at that level, not only do you have a disadvantage because majority of the time you're on a satellite bike, there's also the funding side of it. And, you know, it's hard to kind of go, well, I'll take that amount of money, which is nothing to what a Spanish or Italian guy should be getting, but I still also need to pay for training. I need to go to Spain and Italy and be riding 3 times a week. And, you know, you need to pay for that. And it's on their doorstep. They've got the money. That's where the championship breeds, which is fair enough. But I do feel now like it's in favor of them. There's a few guys, you know, and they're all great riders. I'm not taking anything away from them. But you got guys like Alex Rins that's on a factory Yamaha, has been for a couple of years now. And I kind of sit there scratching my head and I'm like, why? You know, a good rider, but he's had a lot of injuries. Mm. Not consistent, and I'm like, like it shouldn't be doing that. But he's kind of Spanish. There might be a little link somewhere along the line that will maybe help it. You know, it's just you've got to play with the cards that you're dealt. And being British, it doesn't make it any easier. And on the fact of there is no British rider in MotoGP is absolutely crazy. Not in MotoGP, not in Moto2.
That's crazy. A real shame, isn't it? It was a real shame. Listen, I know we're here to talk about motorbikes, but away from BSB, we've got to touch upon two wheels without an engine. For those who don't realise, you are a mega talented road cyclist as well, aren't you? I mean, that's you said earlier, that's a big part of your training. I mean, you compete as well, don't you? It's not just you turn up and ride with other good riders. You compete. You're decent.
Yeah. Kind of wish I never got into it because it took over my life. The better you get, the better you get, the more you have to train. And that's a crazy thing to wake up to every day. But nah, to be honest, I got into the cycling because I used to party a lot. And I didn't really like that lifestyle, but I could still party. I could still train. I could still ride. I'd go party on a Friday night. I'd be at the motocross track, 8 a.m. I'd go do 3 20-minute motos. I'd be sound. But I just felt like that ain't going to be for a long time, you know what I mean? So I said I need something that stops me doing that. Because if there is no downside, you know, having a good time's great. You go train the next day,
cool. Keep doing it.
So I got into cycling and I did a couple of races. I won my first race and people were like, damn, like you should kind of train for it. You know, I kind of not off the sofa, but I ride, but I don't train for cycling. And I just got addicted to it. And I just got better, better. I started my own team. I had that since 2022. We had that team started. So I had the team last year. We was the most successful team in the UK. Winning, the boys winning loads of races. But we can't find sponsorship. So unfortunately, we closed the team, and I was doing like an elite development team, so helping the under 23 riders come up to provide bikes, travel, kit, everything that they didn't have to put their hand in their pocket. It was a great system we had. We got guys that went on to UCI teams, you know, winning massive races. A mega adventure on something that I just kind of started with a friend, and it grew huge. But there was just not enough money to fund it how I wanted. We never earned one penny. I actually lost money every year, but it's the way it is. And I love seeing bringing those kids up. But for me, it's cool. I just love pushing myself beyond limits. And you think you're good until you go to a next level. And then you get to that level, you think you're good, you're at the next level. And it's just crazy. I'm off to Portugal on Thursday as a UCI World Championship qualifier out there. So hopefully I can do something, but it's a cool sport to do. I do always try and get more and more people into it because it's tough, but you can always do it at your own level. And I think it's great for mental health too.
It is that crossover of the two. It's got, I mean, yes, on a motorcycle, you've got a full face helmet. On a road bike, it's a slightly different thing. I mean, is there ever a time when you are busy doing this? And obviously, because you are well known now for both, do the two worlds ever collide? And someone says, are you meant to be on one with a motor on, or the other way? Are you meant to be on one that's just got pedals, or is it two separate bunches of people?
It's not too bad. The bad thing is like, if you're not getting the results on the motorcycle, fingers start being pointed. You're focusing too much on cycling. You're doing this. And I'm like, hang on. I'm doing something to make myself better, and it's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those that's always kind of really frustrated me throughout my career, is finger pointing when it's not going right. But then when I raced BSB in 19, I trained 50% less. I ate Chinese probably four times a week. I was out with the boys three times a week, and I won championship. It just worked. Yeah. I felt good. I was able to perform. Like, I was enjoying it. But then I take it serious, and I'm not partying. I'm not eating Chinese. And the cycling's the problem.
Fitter than you've ever been.
And I'm like, what's going on? But you're always going to have that. But it's weird how I'm more known for cycling in America than I am for moto. Like, a lot of people meet, like, oh, Scott Redding, you know, you're the guy who's cycling, won the race, did that. I'm like, yeah, cool. And they're like, oh, so what are you doing? I'm like, oh, motorcycle rider. Oh, really? And then I explain the story, and they're like, oh, that's super cool. And it's crazy, to be honest. I never thought it would come to that by a long shot.
It just makes me feel fundamentally lazy, to be brutally honest, Scott, given what you're doing. Let's have a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. And if you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. It's been fascinating so far, Scott. So then that leads me on. Yes, two wheels in all forms, petrol powered, and ones that are powered by your considerable engine from the looks of it, my word. So do you ride a motorcycle for pleasure? Do you get out on a leisurely Sunday afternoon ride? Yes, you've got little Hudson to factor in, but is it just, go back to what you said before, it's the job part of your life and that's it?
Yeah, so I don't ride on the road at all, but I do motocross as well for like training. So that's quite cool. I do love motocross. I actually just released a video of a custom 125 build we did through the winters. Definitely like naughty. But going to the motocross, what's cool for me now is like, yes, it's my training, but I enjoy going. Like, a lot of my friends have kids as well, and we just go and they go play in the field, and they're playing with each other, and they're like fighting and figuring it out. And I'm like, you know, that's just how it should be. So it's great to do things where like the family can come and do it as well. So I'm doing my training, having fun, but also having my son there, my wife there, and, you know, other friends and family come along. And I like the day out of it. And, you know, keeping Hudson around the bikes is also important.
That with that in mind then, Scott, given what these kind of different disciplines give you, the fact that you're 33 now, I mean, in other sports, that's you kind of looking at the next port of call's retirement. But in BSB, you've got the likes of Liam Haslam and Josh Brooks well into the 40s. So does that then put you at your age now hitting your peak, getting near your peak, looking at your peak and still thinking I've got a hell of a lot of time left off the back of that?
I don't want to be a dinosaur out there, bro. There's a few dinosaurs out there. I mean, and they're still fast dinosaurs. But I thought I would be retired at 30, multi-millionaire, living the dream. Didn't happen, you know. So things change. You know, I also understand that it's something I'm good at, that I get paid better than what I'd be getting paid doing a normal job. It gives me freedom to be with my family. And I'm very grateful for them opportunities. But I don't want to race forever. Like I said, I don't enjoy it that much of like, if I went to work and I had a choice to race on the weekend, I probably wouldn't do it. Like, it doesn't do it for me like that. Like, I get my kick out of doing many other things, and I've been having that kick since the age of 5, you know, like, it's a long time. I missed my childhood, teenagehood. Like, it's a lot of things I missed out on. There's a lot of things I've done that I probably shouldn't have been doing. It's one of those things. And I would like to do some years BSB. I would like to experience Moto America, get a big RV, get the dog, wife, kid, travel around America, go to each race, just old school, bro. Like, that's what I would like to do. But obviously a few things need to align. And, you know, if I'm still being competitive, I got to consider how long I want to keep doing it. But the problem is for me is Hudson enjoys it that much that it gives me enjoyment of doing it for him. So there's a lot of things. Like, one day, like I said, 30, I thought I'd be done and dusted. And here I am. I'm 33. I'm not done and dusted. And I'm still chipping away to be a better person and a better rider and a better athlete. And I think that's something that I need to keep me on my feet to keep going for the longevity, because I would like to stop on my terms. I think there's nothing worse than an athlete happen to stop his profession due to other problems. And I think that's very mentally tough. A lot of my friends that's had it taken away from them, they've suffered a lot. So I would like to be the decider, like, you know what, I'm done, guys. I might do a race here and there. That would be the best way for me to go out. But you never know. You know, if you're still winning and stuff, like, you're going to be there.
That's a really good, very mature point you make, because, you know, my career was cut short and I had to retire because of injuries. To control your destiny is a wonderful place to be. And I think, as I said earlier, you're in a great place at the moment. Hudson must be proud of you. Your wife's proud of you. Your family, what you're doing is brilliant. But how proud are you of what you've done? If you can look back on your career so far, what's the proudest moment for you? Is it on a push bike, perhaps, because you've surprised people? Or what would you look back at so far in your brilliant career and go, wow, that was a moment I was proud?
Good. Very good question.
Because you must be proud, mate. And if you're not, you really should be proud.
Yeah, it's a weird one. It's more just shocking that it's been and gone. That dream of going to MotoGP, I went there and I was there for 5 years in MotoGP, racing against Valentino Rossi, Jorge Lorenzo, Andrea Dovizioso, Marc Marquez. I've raced him all my life. Like, it's crazy. But it was normal. So it's hard. I think the peak of for my career was Moto2. When I was fighting for the world championship, because I was so confident up here, that was cool, because we built up each year and then we had a bad year and then we bounced back. Cause I knew once I got this Kalex bike, that was my key. I just knew. And I begged for that bike and we got that bike and it clicked. But I was testing and, you know, it's a big show at testing, you know, top of the timesheets. I was like, no, I know I can go fast, but I don't want to show to go fast. So when you put that last tire for a lap time, I said to the team, don't do it. And they were like a bit itchy, you know, like, oh, like, we need to see. I said, don't worry about it. So all through testing, I was like 5th and 6th, but on old tires, because up here, I knew I could do it. And then we got to Qatar test, same thing, Qatar race. Scott Redding has been 5th, 6th, 10th through testing. Boom, he's matching pole position. I was on the front row, and then it was go time. And in the race, I was there second, the whole race battling for first. And that was me on a run. Like, I was just ready for it. And I was just so impressed how it kind of come together that I was able to not doubt myself to a point of like, I know I can win without showing it, without being there. I need to find half a second. I know I've got it. I lost the championship due to an injury. That sucks. But I won my first race in Le Mans and it got cut short due to a bit of rain coming. And what happened? 60% of people, you know, slated me. Oh, you only won because it was raining, blah, blah, blah. Cool. So we went to Mugello the week after. I don't go well in the hot condition. I wrote my bike off in FP3 that bad that I missed the first 5 minutes of qualifying. I qualified pole position. I just locked in. I just remember the feeling of like, you know, when you get in that like zen, it was just me and the bike. I wasn't looking for no one to follow. I was just riding faster, 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 faster. Boom, qualified pole. Mint. On a track that's not my favorite, but I just had that inside of me. I was furious from them comments the week before. And then in the race, it was super hot and I knew that people knew I would fade. They knew it was not a track me with a long straight, but I was just like, I got to make this happen right now. And I just felt good and controlled and I just visioned stuff happening before it happened. Like there's a point in the race where Nicholas Tyrrell looked behind and kind of let me through. But as he was thinking, I should let Scott through, I was already going for it. So I caught him off guard and I won that race in super hot condition, full race distance. I just crossed the finish line like that. I was like, let's fucking go. And then no one could say anything. Like it was just one of those that for me was the moment where I was like, it was just happening. Like I won at Silverstone in front of my home crowd, special livery. That was sick. But that Mugello one, like even I thought it's going to be tough, but you can do it. And to kind of get that win there was just, it was insane. Like that was my moment for sure.
We've had so many wonderful guests on here, but that's one of the most fascinating things I've heard someone say on here. That almost sounds like a film. If you've watched the F1 film with Brad Pitt, where he does the very final lap and where everyone's looking at him and he speaks earlier on in the film about what the best state of him for racing is, it feels like you're flying. And then the last lap he does this. And obviously it's very filmic and we get all the Hollywood side of it. But that's literally what you're talking about. That, I mean, it gives me goosebumps to think about that.
My life has been a film.
You said earlier about people who reach that level of sport are warriors. And just what you've described in that story alone, you do deserve a film about you made one day because what you've been through, mate, wow. It's a different breed, isn't it?
You and that's the thing. We the line that you said, Scott, about your life being a movie is absolutely right. I mean, let's knit this together, Ewan, because I know your traditional final question is about a fantasy ride, but I think we might be using a slightly different mode of transport, don't you think, with Scott, when he talks about the RV and he talks about the idyllic little family.
We normally ask, Scott, we ask our guests a lovely question where we'd love to know your fantasy ride. So if you could ride anywhere in the world, where would that be? What bike would you be riding on? Who would you be riding with? And would there be a soundtrack to your life? What would you be listening to? So, yeah, let's keep it on two wheels. Let's not bin it. But, what bike would you be going on and where would you go if you could have your dream ride?
Oh, man, that's a question. Oh, there's so many places. This world is a huge place and I'd love to see it all. That's, you know, that's my vision. I ain't keeping it local. Like, I'd love to go to Japan and ride. I love riding in LA with the bicycle, so I know what's there. Like, I don't really know. There's so many places in the world to see that I don't even know where I would start. But I would definitely have to be somewhere warm. I don't want no rain. You know, I feel like America, California, like, is such a beautiful place to ride with a motorcycle as well. Japan, just because it's like Japan, it's like so different. But saying that, real talk is at some point in my life, I want to go from one side of Vietnam to the other with my dad on a Cub 90 or 125.
That's
something
cool.
We spoke about. That is it. I want to do it.
Wow. Yeah. That would be a dream ride, man. Well, there you go. You know what bike you're on. You're with your dad across Vietnam. Wow. Would there be any music? What kind of music would you listen to on that ride?
Oh, it depends on the day. Honestly, I'm a big country music fan at the minute. Like, I just love that chill music. Yeah, I don't know. It'd just be an epic trip that I do want to do, but I just don't have the time. And I know I shouldn't say that, because you should make time for those things, because when the time passes, you regret it. It's definitely got to be the one, man. Vietnam, rent a scooter or buy a scooter, ride to the other side, sell it, come home, or give it to someone and come home. Like, that'd be sick. Think of the stories, bro. Think of the stuff you see.
Magical.
Amazing. Magical, man. I mean, yeah. Scott, this has been mind-blowing, mate. Genuinely, when you think about what a rollercoaster of an episode could be, this has touched all the bases. I mean, sadly, that's about it for this week's full chat. I need to go and have a lie down. Powered by Bikeshop, as UK's largest independent motor and cycle insurance broker. Bikeshop will tailor-cut to your exact needs and help you save money on your annual bike, scooter, or moped insurance, and so much more.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I don't know about a lie down. I'm going to go and count my toes and be grateful I've got every part of me still on there, because, yeah, Scott, you've been through it. Honestly, this has been one of my favourite episodes. A massive thank you to the one and only Scott Redding.
Super. Thank you. It's been great to be on here, guys.
Amazing stuff, mate. All the very best for BSB as well this year. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so that you never miss an episode. See, I'm that thrilled about this, I can't even talk properly. Or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from.
As ever, for me and Prats, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you for watching. Take care.